last night I was talking with a friend of mine, and I was telling him that I was feeling kind of bummed because I had to preach today, and I always like to start off my homilies with a story or something like that, and I didn't have anything. So he said, well, why don't you just give him your homily? I said, okay. And then he proceeded to tell me about a book he's reading on quantum theology. I was intrigued. So I asked him to describe it to me, and I'm going to describe it to you because I really think it speaks well of the readings today. But before I do that, I want to make sure I add these caveats. Neither my friend nor I are physicists or theologians. And he related this story to me in the context of the middle of a fundraiser beef and beer. So, if there are any physicists out there, and I happen to forget something or misconstrue something, you can let me know after Mass. I'll be in the back. What he said to me was, this idea of quantum theology is really based on the same theory of quantum physics. And that is that there are subatomic particles known as quarks, and they work in pairs. And energy between these quarks has them work in order to develop the atom so that the atom takes the form of the thing that it's meant to be. After he explained all this to me, he said, so quantum theology is really very simple. It's all about relationships. I was glad he told me that because I really believe that today's scriptures speak to us about the nature of relationships. In the first reading, we see God creating man, creating us, to be in relationship with Him. We also see that God creates man and woman so that we can be in relationship with one another. Finally, God creates the earth so that it can sustain our relationships with one another and with God by giving and providing us life. In the second reading, Paul demonstrates the relationship between Adam and Jesus. Both share humanity. Both share a unique and profound relationship with God. The one difference is that the first humans kind of failed in their relationship with God to the detriment of all of us. Jesus restores that relationship by being in perfect relationship with his Father. In the Gospel reading, we hear about Matthew telling us the story of the relationship between Jesus and the earth. Jesus goes out into the desert to a quiet place. He fasts for 40 days and 40 nights, and he's hungry. From that relationship, we can see how it can become overly attractive for us to want these things of the earth. So much so that even Jesus was tempted to take stones and turn them into bread. But the most important relationship that Matthew illustrates in today's gospel is Jesus' relationship with his Father that's rooted in the scriptures. The challenge is that the evil one is indeed clever. The evil one does provide us with truth, just enough truth for us to be fooled into thinking that we can control this truth. For example, in the first reading, when the evil one tempts the woman saw that the tree was good for food. pleasing to the eyes and desirable for gaining wisdom. They're all good things. Food is a good thing. Wealth is a good thing. Power is a good thing. But it's when those things begin to control us, instead of us controlling them, that we wind up getting ourselves into trouble. The idea that the human person was offered the opportunity to become like gods, to recognize the difference between good and evil, and to make a choice, is really fundamentally what we've done in sinning against our origins. We are created in the image and likeness of God. We are not to be God. And it's when we pursue those things, those selfish things, that it really disrupts all of our relationships. We could see that it disrupts Adam and Eve's relationship with God because they hide from Him. We see that it disrupts their relationship between one another, because now all of a sudden they recognize that they're naked and they need to cover themselves and hide themselves from one another. Jesus, on the other hand, illustrates the power and the value of being a selfless person. In the gospel, he's tempted to turn stones into bread, but only for his own purposes. We see later in the scriptures that Jesus takes the bread and multiplies it for the sake of others. This is exactly the call that we need to recognize, particularly in this season of Lent. Throughout the season, often what we'll do is we'll exercise certain disciplines. We'll deny ourselves certain things. But what's really important for us to remember is, in denying ourselves those things, we shouldn't be doing it for ourselves. We really want to be doing it for others. Take, for example, the discipline on Ash Wednesday, when all of us come to church to receive ashes in the sign of the cross on our forehead. It's usually one of the most crowded days in churches in the whole year. And it's easy to be kind of fooled into thinking that the ashes on my forehead are for me, because really they're not. I had another conversation with a friend of mine this week on the evening of Ash Wednesday, talking about how uncomfortable it was to be walking around with ashes on my forehead in the workplace and just in general walking around. Monsignor Carroll gave me ashes on Wednesday, so I had ashes as big as my forehead, which is getting bigger, unfortunately. But the ashes are not there for my sake. They're really there as a witness. They're a witness of our recognition that we are a sinful people. They're a witness of our Christian commitment. But most importantly, the ashes in the sign of the cross is a witness to us knowing that Jesus Christ, through the cross, takes our sinfulness and is willing to wash it away. Throughout the season of Lent, I encourage you to continue to work through the season exercising disciplines, but doing it in such a way where you're doing it for someone else and not so much for yourself. In the back of church, we have some rice bowls in the display. We encourage you to take a rice bowl home with you. Have a simple meal once or twice or three times a week. Take the money that you save by having that simple meal, put it in the rice bowl so that someone else will have food to eat. Lastly, I wanted to mention something about Valentine's Day, because Valentine's Day, too, is about relationships. It's interesting because Valentine's Day, much like Christmas and some of the other holidays, have really become secularized and of the world. But one of the most profound images of Valentine's Day is a heart pierced by an arrow. A heart pierced by an arrow is an indication for us that in relationships, sometimes we are broken. We're broken people. And the healing that comes from being a broken person often relies on our thinking of other and stepping away from thinking of ourselves. I know in my work, in my husbandhood, in my fatherhood, that those times where I fail the most are times when I'm thinking of me and me alone. The important thing is for me to think of others. And in this season of Lent, as we work through it, thinking of our sinfulness, it would be to our benefit to think of the healing power of God, the relationship that Jesus had in trusting his Father, and how that trust and how that fidelity created the redemption for each and every one of us. In our exercise of discipline, I also encourage you to exercise living in the image and likeness of God by living your life